Welcome to Talking History. I'm Jerry Zahavi, and it's a real pleasure to have in the studios with me Alan Ballard, professor of history and Africana studies at the State University of New York at Albany. He is the author of several books, nonfiction and fiction, and he can talk a little bit about them. But today we're going to talk about his life and his life as recounted in a book that he recently published, Breaching Jericho's Walls, A 20th Century African-American Life, which just came out, published by the SUNY Press, State University of New York Press. Alan, welcome to our studios.
Well, thank you so much for having me. You know, it's a good spring day up here in Albany. And, you know, we're welcoming this kind of weather after all that we've gone through this winter. Yeah, so it's good. It's good. It's a nice day.
I thought maybe we'd take your life chronologically and we'd start at the beginning. Tell me a little bit about your parents and how they shaped you.
Well, I was shaped in Philadelphia and by two families, really. My parents got divorced early on, but by a Southern family from Greenwood, South Carolina, where my grandfather really had basically brought his whole family, close to seven or eight children, north. And by my mother's family, who were really black elite, descended from Underground Railroad folks, from caterers and barbers who were at that time the pinnacle of black society. So I was shaped by these two influences. I've never quite reconciled them in my life. But I think by the families, one family stressing, both families really stressing academics, one family also stressing athletics. That was the family from the South, because they were really a family of great athletes who were all American, black all-Americans in their ways. As a matter of fact, a book just came out about Roy Campanella. And, you know, my uncles played with Roy Campanella in high school. So they were all these folks. So that... But primarily, I think I was shaped by a great elementary school. It's called the Joseph E. Hill School, and by a great educator. Her name was Nellie Bright, a black woman descended from really from folks from the islands who were Episcopalians. And Nellie Bright was just kind of, you know, a great person. Early black graduate of the University of Pennsylvania, a writer, a musician, and a wonderful educator who just, you know, hovered over us, constantly trying to see that we excelled and that we reached to the heights that she thought that we could reach. She was a fascinating woman in her way. Normally she was strict disciplinarian. Boy, life was rough with her. But in addition to the disciplinarian kind of aspect of her, she exposed us to the black poor. She actually had us in sixth and seventh grade walking around making surveys of folks who needed coal or who needed food. She actually had us doing that. Children doing that without adult supervision, you know, couldn't possibly be done today. But she had us do that and bring it back into her. We had a song, you know, we will keep the schoolyard clean. We would sing that song in the morning. It was a sparkling place, and it's a place that I love. And, you know, when people ask me, well, who are you? I'm Junie Ballard from Hill School. That's who I really am. I think I'm kind of sorry sometimes that I ever had to leave that cocoon, because and even now, it's funny, but when I'm feeling kind of low, I'll sit sometimes down and I'll start playing some of the songs from we used to sing in Hill School. We just do. You know, it's the way it is. So we were exposed to everything. She did not believe in keeping us away from the world. Everything was brought to us. Opera, right? classical music, folk music, and she demanded that the teachers work hard, and they did. So that's what really formed me, that and my church, which was an Episcopalian church and was actually situated right next door to the Hill School. And its pastor was a Reverend E. Sidnor Thomas, and he was a very, very highly educated man and also a huge disciplinarian. So these folks shaped us.
You also went to a fairly famous high school, Central High School. Could you talk a little bit about what you took away from that experience?
Yeah, Central High School, Philadelphia, is my second love after Hill School, right? The Central High School of Philadelphia was founded as really an institution to educate everybody in that city at the highest level. And it had a tradition of turning out fine scholars. The only way you got into Central, it's like Bronx High School of Science, but I always say better, that you got in by examination. It was a great leveler. And there were, say at that time again, there was no affirmative action. Everybody got into Central one way through the exams. And I'm still amazed, that, for example, Hill School, which was a segregated school, it put a couple of us in there. No, we went in there. And my cousin also went in there. And Central was an academic paradise. It was heavily Jewish. I'd say, as the guys say now when they see me, right, they say, hey, fella, right, how do you like being around all these old Jews? I think they say that now, right? But it was 80% Jewish. And the Jews and the blacks and the Armenians and the Poles and the Italians from Philadelphia who were there in minuscule numbers, we all got along famously. And I think we all got along so famously because, again, here there was a great educator, a man by the name of William E. Cornock, who actually created the advanced placement system of examinations in this country. And Dr. Cornock was University of Pennsylvania, PhD and graduate, always dressed like a patrician and always demanding, again, the highest academic standards and keeping the place totally academic. No joking around. It was almost like you were in college at that time. As a matter of fact, Central is the only school in the country that can still give you a BA degree. We had a BA degree from Central. I got two BAs, right? So, but all I can remember is being so proud to be a Central man. It really put a certain cachet on you. And it meant that you loved books and that you loved learning. And I can't remember at Central anything except excitement about the books and excitement about going to class. I can't remember, I don't want to go to school. Hey, I don't want to do this. No. We look forward to Mr. Disharoon's Shakespeare classes, and we look forward to Professor Boileau's French classes. And it was an academic paradise. Alain Locke went there, the first African-American Rhodes Scholar and a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of Harvard, actually the originator of the Harlem Renaissance. So he went there. A number of other great scholars went there, and, it's still a great school.
Your father was in the police department in Philadelphia. Could you talk a little bit about his career and his influence on you?
Yeah, well, my dad was actually a brilliant man who dropped out of med school at the University of Pennsylvania because he had to feed his brothers and sisters and see that they got through college, because practically every one of his siblings graduated from a black college, and they all did graduate from black colleges. My dad was a famous figure in Philadelphia. He rose through the ranks mainly by examinations, just taking good examinations and scoring very high, and particularly under the Dilworth time period, when Mayor Dilworth came into office and instituted a total kind of reform of the system. So my dad moved up. He was probably the best cop that people ever had around. I mean, he was rough when he had to be rough. But everybody loved him, primarily because he wanted order in the community and safety in the community, and because he treated everybody equally. You could be a prostitute, but my dad would call you Mrs., and he would insist that the officers do the same thing. And he was active in the community, right and left, and he also was active with kids in the community, constantly working with them. And like I say, he was a great athlete. And again, that carried a great cachet in the community. He was an All-American, black All-American basketball, football player. And actually, he coached Campanella when Campanella was in one part of his earlier career when he was at the Wissahickon Boys Club before he went on the police force. So, you know, my dad just was kind of in the center of the community. He was a great man. He had his problems, and I had my problems with him because he was so much of a disciplinarian. But when all is said and done, you know, I definitely, you know, cherish my father.
It seems like athletics and academics were both very strong parts of your life. Were you ever torn between them? Was there any pressure placed upon you to excel in one or the other or both?
The pressure on me was always to do well academically when it's all said and done. But I grew up in a kind of a rough neighborhood, and I had to become an athlete in order to survive, frankly. I don't think that had I been simply a very good student that I would have survived. My life there would have been rough all day long. So I had a lot of pressure on me to be an athlete. And the problem was that I was not a great athlete. Now, for whatever reason, you know, I had flat feet, whatever, I just was not a great athlete. And that did cause a lot of conflict. But, you know, sooner or later I went on and I did play football. And I, you know, was a decent football player. Enough so to deflect any kind of force on me from other areas, right? So I made it that way. But then gradually, you know, it's a funny thing. Athletics became a part of me. And the camaraderie of the field. These guys that I played football with in high school and in college later on, they're like brothers. You know, I still see them now. I see them now. We still get on the telephone and we still talk. And we talk like it was yesterday.
Did you always feel directed towards going on to college?
Yeah, at Central High, it was expected. At Central High School, it was totally expected you would go to college. That was the mindset of the institution. And, you know, as I write in the book, really, that it was clear we had Phi Beta Kappas from all over the place. By the time Central High, by the time we had our first 10-year reunion, everybody was like Phi Beta Kappa from all over the Ivy League institutions all over the country and other places, too. So, yeah, it was. Central High had a total kind of focus on one thing. You're going to be great with the books, and you're going to be great in science, right? And we're not going to take anything backward from that. And I had, like, guys sitting next to me I really know he's a great guy. Isidore Brodsky, right? Isidore Brodsky. And Iz was the best student in our class, the best graduate in the class. He went on to become a great oncologist at Hahnemann Hospital and Jefferson Hospital in Philadelphia. Great. I mean, really distinguished. He passed a couple of years back. But Iz was everything. He'd come in, he'd just, those labs and stuff, he'd just go through them. And if there are any problems around, I mean, we would just sit down and talk to Iz a little bit. How are we going to figure this thing out? How are we going to figure it out? Yeah, he was there. I mean, just bright. And we all, now, helped each other academically. There was no competition, no competition to see who or hiding of information and things. So we all were eager to move forward.
So how did you come to attend Kenyon College?
Well, when I came to my senior year, actually, I really wanted to go to West Point. But for some reason, I couldn't get an appointment there. I basically didn't want to attend a segregated institution. Now, that's a rough situation. Let me say this. All my uncles, again, these great athletes, these wonderful folks, right? Comfortable with everything in this world. My uncles really insisted, as did my father, that I go to a black institution. But now, I have been raised in an integrated neighborhood. Even though I went to a segregated school, I've been raised in an integrated neighborhood with Italians and blacks living together. And I'd gone to an integrated high school. And I didn't see any reason for segregating myself. Because, again, Nellie Bright had said, move upwards, outwards. And there were other folks in the community, including Reverend Thomas and a doctor who had gone to Howard, who told me, Alan, listen, you know, you can't segregate yourself. I'm saying this because what had happened was to Central High School came a man from Kenyon College, and Kenyon College had decided that they were going to integrate. And they wanted a black student two black students who would be capable of operating in the Kenyon College elite white environment. And Dr. Cornog selected me as a candidate from Central High School to go. So, make a long story short, I decided to go to Kenyon, because I also wanted to be like Jackie Robinson, you know, I wanted to be a pioneer. And because my world had been opened up too broadly for me to voluntarily segregate myself again. And that's what it was. So there I went out to Kenyon College, way out in Ohio. And it was rough in a sense that I was plunged into an all-white environment, and along with my buddy, Stanley Jackson from Steubenville, who was a black athlete from Steubenville and also a good student, who was a very centered guy, thank goodness. Stanley was centered. I was like, right off the wall there, and I with my kind of emotions and stuff, but Stanley was centered. And the two of us went out to integrate this white institution, which was all male. When I think back on it, you know, I would probably do the same thing again, but it really messed up parts of my life in terms of socializing with black folks, as my uncles had said. It probably put too much of an aristocratic, elitist kind of patina in my head. And it probably isolated me from my soul, which was really back there in Hill School when all is said and done. And so there was, you know, was created inside of me some kind of a Hegelian dialectic, a real kind of clash between, you know, where I'd come from and this new environment into which I was going. Kenyon was a great school academically, but socially, Stanley and I were isolated. And our only kind of recreation was going into the black community in Mount Vernon, Ohio, on the weekends. And then going up to Oberlin College, where my cousin was at the time, we'd go up to Oberlin, hitchhike up there on the weekends. And then sometimes we'd go down to Ohio State, to Columbus, where there were black fraternities and stuff like that. But we, on campus, when all the campus was flooded with all these activities and dances on the weekends and all this drunkenness and alcoholism and stuff on the weekends, we were not there, really. It was not part of us, right? So we went to classes. We both excelled at the school. I mean, I graduated Phi Beta Kappa. I was president of the student body. And Stanley was a captain of the track team. And we both graduated together, and we did our time there. But and then we're exposed to incredible teachers who had no sense, of course, of racial things in them. We were exposed to wonderful teachers. Best one I had was Professor Richard Solomon, who was a great classicist. A Jewish-German emigre from the University of Hamburg, I believe, who was a renowned scholar in Europe and who actually had a key to the Vatican archives, we were told. I mean, that's how good he was. He was totally a scholar. Everything centered, again, about research and about getting your facts right about this, but he was also a wonderful teacher. He was a storyteller at the same time. And I see him now walking around the campus, his head, good morning, Mr. Barrett, how are we this morning, right? He's just a wonderful presence. Had a Ray English, who was actually British colonel who'd fought in Burma during the war, and he was a great political theory teacher, and Ralph Brabante, who went on to become a great specialist on Pakistan, and who taught me public administration. We had great teachers there.
So this was the late 40s, early 50s?
Yeah, we're talking late 40s, early 50s. And Kenyon was, at that time, populated totally, probably half and half with Army veterans, military veterans, and with kids out of high school. So it was a really wonderful mix. And these veterans, they didn't play about the schoolwork either. I mean, these guys had been all over. When I say all over, you name the place, Guadalcanal, right, Saipan, whatever. The Battle of the Bulge, they'd been over there, they'd been flying over Germany. These guys didn't play too much. They were pretty serious about their scholarship and about where they wanted to go. They played, on the weekends they'd have their parties, but, they were aimed on something higher at that same time. We had some folks there. Paul Newman was there at the same time, and we were there. Ed Doctorow was there. He was in my class. John Crow Ransom was, the wonderful scholar, was still there. So Kenyon was a great place at the time.
Like other African American students who were breaking color walls at various institutions, you talk about feeling that you're always on trial. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, Kenyon was at that time. I was at Kenyon, and I was on the cusp of a wave of young black folks who were integrating these schools. You would always find two or three of us at these institutions. A place like Harvard institutions would have, say, at that time, five or six. You would always find this. But we were all like scouts into foreign territory. And we were all judged. We all knew that we were representatives of our race and that we couldn't do anything wrong and that we had to excel academically. Because at the first sign of a kind of academic shortcomings, you would get, or we expected to get, a backlash of, you know, that's how dumb they are. That's the way those folks are. They're dumb. They're stupid. What's remarkable is that all of us, a lot of us, graduated Phi Beta Kappa. So we had this pressure on us. And you had this immense, I guess I talk about it all the time with my students, even these days, about the clash between where you came from and, you know, how you want to be in your natural sense of you, how you want to just kind of feel about yourself, and the white world, which was a world ruled by a sense of black inferiority and white superiority. That's the way it was. So anything that indicated black intellectual inferiority was jumped upon. So there was enormous pressure. I write in the book about how I failed an examination and how I felt, no, I really felt that I had let down the entire race simply because I had failed a physics examination. And I left out of the book the fact that there was so much pressure that a lot of black students committed suicide. It's almost like the Indian students in the same way, and, you know, being put into these different environments and this different culture being forced upon you. I went home one day at vacation, and I was so tired. I got home, and my folks were at church, and I got home, and the Southern Airs came on the radio, and they were just singing something from the down south, some beautiful song from down south. And I just put my head down on the kitchen table and cried. And it was 10:45 in the morning, just cried to be away from that sterile kind of white environment and to be home once again.